from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
And we are back in Canada, ladies and gentlemen. We are done our escapade in, how would you describe it? In the second world or whatever?
It was like tropical, a second world paradise.
Yeah. If those two words make any sense to you, mm-hmm. second world and paradise, we were there. We were in a place where in one, you know, if you look one direction, you will see multi-million dollar houses. In the other direction, you will see houses that are made out of just bits of wood that they found in the garbage. And trust me when I say that actually the one thing about this area that I will say was pretty consistent was that there was trash everywhere.
Yeah, it's a pretty dirty place.
What is up with that?
Do you remember that dog? That dog that looked like it'd been decomposing for at least a month when
Street
we
dog.
Saw it? Yeah, it was just this dead dog on the side of the road. And as a North American, looking at that thing was crazy. Because all I could think is, why didn't anyone come and take care of this? Oh yeah, because there is no roadkill patrol in second world countries.
Roadkill patrol, is that what it's called around here?
I don't know.
There's a patrol, you call them, be like, roadkill patrol, okay. How can I help you today?
You know what, if they're not called that, they should be, because that was awesome.
Now, for those of you that don't go on the site, I had recently posted that I was taking a few days off after I landed, and the reason was because I actually cracked a rib a couple of days before I left. Now, before you start feeling sorry for me and be like, oh, poor Jakey, cracked a rib. Yeah, the reason I cracked a rib was surfing. So... I don't know. It's hard for people to feel sympathetic when you're like, yeah, every time I breathe, it hurts. But I did this doing a leisure sport for, you know, white people, because that's what...
Yeah, in the middle of winter.
In the middle of winter, exactly. Yeah. But it's not... Here's the deal, though. It's not winter for about one-fifth of the listening audience. It's actually summer for them, right? Because we have a lot of people in New Zealand and Australia that listen. So every time we talk about them, talk to them saying, this is winter time, they're like, what are you talking about, mate? A summer. That's not even good. I'm not even ever going to do that again.
I can do the Kiwi accent if I say one thing, and it's the thing that Dantastic used to say. I used to make Dantastic say internet all the time because I love the way
internet.
That's pretty good.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I think he hates me, but I made him say it maybe every day.
I hate you just
for
listening
a month.
Just listening to it. some of the things that we've had to adjust to when we've come back. Number one, prices of everything.
Okay, what
the hell? We just bought hot dogs, and I swear to you, 8 hot dogs cost me $5, all right? And it's not even that expensive where I come from, Montreal, all right? I can get that for 99 cents, but around here, the cheapest hot dogs are $4 for a pack. I just cannot believe how expensive it is for miscellaneous sloshed meats. Don't they have don't they slaughter all kinds of cows around here?
We did just go from Dominican Republic Cabrete, which is cheapest prices ever, to Calgary, which are some of the most expensive prices ever. We in Calgary, property is very expensive and everything is very heavily taxed. And that's reflected in the produce
and the price
and the food,
of things.
Yeah, and everything. Everything in Calgary is extremely expensive. You know, so I'm sorry.
Didn't you say that you were looking for, at one point, apartments in New York? And you found that they were cheaper than Calgary? What is up with this town?
They were the same. They're about the same. It was about, for what I could get in Calgary, in a nice area, for a nice place in Calgary, I could get basically the same place, maybe with a little bit less of a view in New York.
Wow.
Not downtown New York, but I wasn't looking for downtown Calgary either. It was pretty crazy.
Now, since we are in Calgary, this means that there's going to be a couple of events that we're going to be attending. And all you Calgarians out there that listen to the podcast, I strongly suggest that you mark this down on your calendar. I'm going to give you 2 dates, and I want you to save these. If you're not in Calgary, fuck you. I'm just joking. Okay, the first date is April 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the University of Calgary. And apparently there is a presentation about essentially Evolution versus Creationism. So we're going to be attending that. Is it who's it hosted by? Is it Center for Inquiry, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, this is going to be Center for Inquiry, absolutely. And they're going to be having some research scientists in from the Terrell Museum in Drumheller, which is the big dinosaur museum. So that should be pretty interesting. Because, I mean, how are you supposed to deny evolution when there's a guy who makes his living off of it right there?
He's working for Satan, I'm pretty sure. And that's to test your faith, and obviously... You failed that. So that's the Monday, April 11th. So we're going to be there. Hopefully we're going to hook up with some fans of the show. Also,
all the way to say that, we're going to hook up.
Hook up, yeah.
Yeah.
On the 18th, there's another event that we're going to go to. This one's a little bit unusual. It's apparently about how Coca-Cola is an evil empire and engaged in torture, kidnapping, and murder of union leaders in Colombia, Guatemala, and Turkey.
Sounds interesting.
So, Nate Phelps sent you an invitation, didn't you, for this event?
On behalf of the Calgary Atheist and Secular Humanist Meetup. So
this is one time where we just don't only talk about religion, we also talk about humanism. That's going to be one of those. That's the Monday after that, that's April 18th. So, since I'm in Calgary and there's a lot of... I mean, honestly, compared to Montreal, there's a lot more going on in Calgary.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping even in the next couple of months, once the weather starts getting better, I want to make a good atheist barbecue. Yeah. I'm going to barbecue some things. And then I'm going to get individuals to come over, and then I'm going to stuff their face full of hot dogs. Although now that I realize how expensive hot dogs are, I'm thinking I'm just going to make filet mignon, because apparently that's less expensive around here per pound. I just don't understand this fucking town. Tell me what is wrong in this town, and we'll, move on. Okay, so on today's show, we're going to be talking about a few things. Number one, we're going to be talking about a little reminder for everyone who goes to the site. I want you to go there. There's a post about Christopher Hitchens being nominated for Time Magazine's Most Influential People. He's currently 14th, just behind Lady Gaga, Beyonce, and a guy called Rain, who has the number one spot. And if you wonder, who is Rain? Well, he is I believe he's a Korean pop star who is also in Ninja Assassins. The man is ridiculous. There's no reason why this person should be the most influential person in Time Magazine, but apparently he has an army of fans, so let's also join together as an army of fans and make sure that Christopher Hitchens gets at least in the top 10, please. I mean, it's the last thing. The man is about to die. Really? Honestly, he's on his fucking deathbed. Can we not do this as one of those final, huzzah, you made it to the top 10 of Time Magazine, which you don't even give a shit about, but at least go vote for him. And I say this reading, like I've been reading his memoirs recently. His Hitch 22 autobiography that he just wrote. And he wrote this before he got cancer. And the one thing I got to tell you that's very fascinating, interesting, and the holy shit, I didn't know this about Christopher Hitchens, was really his how staunch of a socialist slash communist he used to be. That really kind of shocked me, especially if you were only introduced to Christopher Hitchens in the later part of your life, you know, in the past maybe 4 or 5 years, where this is the same man who supported the invasion of Iraq by the Bush administration. And you're like, how could this man be like a crazy socialist? Well, his autobiography, Hitch 22, talks about his youth in the socialist movement in England. Also him traveling to Cuba to witness the socialist, quote unquote, paradise that they had set there. And his various adventures. Like, he's a guy who has a very big hard-on for poets. So if you know who most of these poets that he quotes are, or that he just mentions, I was with James Fenton. I don't fucking know who that is, man. I don't care about poetry, but that's a different story. Nevertheless, it's kind of interesting to see, to read his story. And the one thing that I found, at least so far, the most interesting, is how his mother died. She killed herself in Greece, right about the time where Greece was having like a crazy military coup. She kills herself with her then lover, who's a manic depressive, and he has to go over to Greece and identify the body. And meanwhile, he has to converse with all of these despots like shake their hands and things like that. And have to, yeah, I know. Having to fucking deal with him, especially being a hardcore socialist that he was. I mean, you can only imagine how just gritting his teeth, being like, I want to punch you in the face for all the terrible deeds you've done. But that was at least so far. I'm about halfway through. So far, that was the most interesting part. And also his relationship with his mother, which I found to be kind of interesting. I mean, his mom seemed to be a free spirit, someone who wanted to really live the kind of high life, but marries a Navy man with no imagination, no social graces, a brick wall, essentially. Yeah, she married a brick wall. And all of that, I mean, those two would have never gotten married were it not for the war, right? He's a product. The Union is a product of the war. Very special circumstances where people get together where perhaps they probably wouldn't have in normal circumstances. So I think that he felt a certain degree of a pity and regret over that relationship. So it's a really good book, and I strongly recommend you guys read it. It's called Hitch 22. If you want to get a good idea of who Christopher Hitchens is, then you should read this book. And you should also, one part that you're going to quite enjoy is him talking about how much booze and smoking he did, realizing, of course, that he's now dying of esophageal cancer. Will be one of those, oh yeah, now I know why you're dying of that, buddy. Yeah, you dug your own grave, Chris.
When he writes about like the smoking, is it affectionate? Is it like, oh, and then I took a smoke and I put it to my lips and I inhaled the lovely aroma of toxic wonderfulness.
He talks more about alcohol rather than cigarettes, actually. He talks about certain places where he would go to drink, where many of the sort of like some very famous people like George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell used to go, kind of like these weird private clubs where people drank. I mean, you have to be invited. It's like upper class, upper crust kind of folks. But he even mentioned saying that sometimes he would just go there in the afternoon, just get completely soused, and then wonder, what am I doing? Is this really a good idea? Maybe it's too much. So he had more of an inclining for booze, I think, back then. So he's much more of a boozer than I think a smoker. Okay, so the topics for today's show, they're divided into basically two parts. The first part, we're going to be talking about freedom of speech and everything that entails. Specifically the Westboro Baptist Church, and also something that's going on in Afghanistan, which I'll get to in a moment. And the second part, we're going to be talking about this one guy called Bob Dutko, who has a DVD or a series of DVDs called 10 Proof of God's Existence. And I'm just going to be reviewing some of his basic proofs because I didn't buy his DVD, but I did listen to kind of a preview of it. And I think that we can all understand where he's going to go with this. And we're just going to be joking about this a little bit. But first, let's talk about freedom of speech. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this. Recently, well, it's not really that recent, but the Westboro Baptist Church, if you went on the site, you might have seen a video that I put up from Louis Theroux. And it was called The Most Hated Family in America. This was a special that he did on the BBC in 2007. He went back this year to revisit the family. And basically, there's the link for that video. I strongly recommend you guys watch it. But it made me think about right around the time where he made his documentary in 2007, Fred Phelps and his daughter Shirley had lost a court decision, a lower court decision. Essentially, they were sued by a grieving father by the name of... what's his name? Albert Schneider. And basically his son had been killed in I think it's Iraq or Afghanistan. I'm not sure which one. And they obviously gone there to picket the funeral, calling, you know, saying that thank God for dead soldiers and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you've seen their signs. I don't need to remind you the kind of shit that they put up. So he sued them for emotional distress. And he originally won. He won the decision. I think, I believe it was about $6 million in punitive damages, emotional distress, and so on and so forth.
Holy crap. How the hell did they come up with that number?
Well, the total was $10,900,000 that he won. But then in September 24th, 2009, a federal appeals court actually reversed the decision and found in favor of the Westboro Baptist Church, saying that they had just essentially been expressing their First Amendment rights. And then Snyder was ordered to pay the legal fees of the Westboro Baptist Church, which amounted to about $16,000. Wow. And that was the last time I've heard anything about this particular appeals. Now, Snyder has decided not to pay, although I don't know if that's necessarily the wisest thing. And a few organizations have come forward and offered to pay the legal fees in exchange for that. But I thought that we'd actually talk about that, and in particular, something that appeared recently. Now, I don't know if you guys remember, a little while ago, Pastor Terry Jones, who was a fundamentalist preacher in Florida, and he decided that he was going to burn the Quran. And at first, he didn't actually do so because he got pressured from even the U.S. I think he got a call from the president actually saying, like, please don't do this because you're going to cause some fucking shit. And he ignored them. So he did this recently. And what happened, at least in Afghanistan, is that there were a number of protests and even some violent reactions. For instance, 7 UN workers were actually killed in a riot, specifically because these rioters were protesting against the burning of the Quran. And the envoy to Afghanistan, a man by the name of Stefan D. Mistura, basically issued this statement, and I'll read you the statement before we have a casual conversation about what freedom of speech means. He said this: freedom of speech does not mean freedom of offending culture, religion, traditions, especially when there are so many of us, both civilian and military, in many parts of the world, and particularly in Afghanistan. So I think the main blame we have is about the irresponsible gesture that was made on that case. The proof is that those who entered our building were actually furiously angry about the issues of the Quran. There was nothing political there. So he's referring to the people who broke into the UN and murdered 7 innocent individuals for no other reason than the fact that Terry Jones, a man in the U.S., a man in Florida, had decided to burn the Quran. And you might also recall that I also want to read you something that the response from the U.S. government, from both President Barack Obama and General David Petraeus, who's the NATO chief of NATO in Afghanistan, were condemning the Quran burning alone. So I want to begin by actually talking about the Westboro Baptist Church. We'll head back a little bit. And there are some people, and I even know this on the site, some people that are saying, oh, you know, they have no right to do this. They shouldn't be allowed to picket funerals and spew their fucking hideous nonsense. How do you feel, first of all, about the notion that people who really fundamentally believe in freedom of speech would be willing to curtail Westboro Baptist Church and saying, you need to shut the fuck up?
See, that's the problem. I mean, the thing with freedom of speech is it's all-encompassing. So even if something's ridiculous, you still have to say, you know what, you have the right to say it. However, you can have another group of people show up, stand on the other side of the fence, look them straight in the eye and say, you guys are fucking morons and the things that you believe are stupid, and scream back. I mean, you guys can have the biggest screaming match you want, but it's not fair for anybody to say that, you know, they're not welcome, they're not invited. However, if this is a private funeral, which I think is maybe the solution here, to maybe start making some of these events a little bit more private, then you do have the right to say, you know what, you're not allowed on this property. That might be a solution.
Well, doesn't that just sort of like, isn't that just a kind of a convenient way to bypass this whole freedom of speech? Well, it's private now.
No, you're not allowed to be invited. A slippery slope situation, right? I don't want to be saying that the Westboro Baptist Church can't say something, even though that would be fantastic, because it slowly starts encroaching on my rights, and I don't want that. However, it does make sense that in a private venue, which is what's happening, right? The reason they're allowed to show up is because these are military funerals, so they can show up and say whatever the fuck they want and do whatever the fuck they want. But if we brought these indoors and we brought them basically to where this was like the family renting the church or something, or even a hall or a funeral home or whatever, they would no longer be welcome there.
I think the part that disturbs me the most is the fact that, you know, there's always someone who's going to ruin everybody's good time, right? There's always going to be someone who just takes the rules too far or says something that you find is so vile and so wicked. You're like, I would really like to create some kind of law so I never have to hear that again. But this is where we have to be careful. This is that kind of slippery slope that you were talking about, that as soon as you say you're not allowed to say this, you know, as soon as you protect a particular kind of speech, you're saying like, no, this is absolutely not allowed. It makes a completely crazy precedence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we would all love that the Westboro Baptist Church would just shut the fuck up. I mean, for the most part, their rhetoric is insane. I mean, there's no one on this fucking planet that's going to say, oh yes, that makes some sense to me. Everyone is wrong except for the Westboro Baptist Church. Everyone is going to hell except for these fucking folks. And you're like, yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, they're clowns. They're jokes. I mean, the reason they exist is because we give them a platform to exist. I mean, if they just went around with their little placards, what are they, like 40 people? If that, they're nothing. They're nobody. And yet they are in our minds and we can't stop forgetting about them. We think about them all the time. We're like, what is the Westboro Baptist Church doing now, right? I mean, we have a bit of a sick fascination, I will admit. But at the same time, they are a bit of that perverse angle of freedom of speech. They are one aspect of it that we feel sometimes uncomfortable with, but they are the reminder of what that means, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does freedom of speech really mean? Like if you accept this Stefan D. Mistura's concept of what freedom of speech is, it means, well, you can talk about anything so long as it doesn't offend people's culture, religion, or traditions. What the fuck is left, man? I have a freedom of speech when talking about movies I don't like or other people whose behaviors I'm not quite fond of, unless they somehow fit into those three categories.
Well, and it's ridiculous to say, you know, basically these certain types of people have the right to not be offended. That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. You don't. If you want to protect yourself and live in a box, then fine. But if you're going to participate in the world around you, then you might get offended here and there because other people get to say what they want.
I find it surprising that in an instance where over 100 people are wounded and 19 people have died in Afghanistan, since last Friday, over the demonstrations about this Quran burning, everybody else is saying, Terry Jones is at fault. For what? For burning a fucking book. All right? For burning a book. And then everyone else, including the President of the United States, says, oh, well, you did the wrong thing here, buddy. Why don't you have some fucking guts to stick up for the ideas that you have? Look, in places like Afghanistan, freedom of speech, that is not an idea that anyone is interested in, okay? No one is wondering, oh, I hope that my rights for freedom of speech aren't being infringed. No, this is the same place where tribal law is king, where local mullahs are essentially fucking dictating, kings that decide absolutely everything from the rights of a woman to the rights of absolutely everybody else. These people have a right to not be offended. They have a right to shut the fuck up and just deal with the fact that individuals are going to tell them that they are either wrong, that they dislike what they do. And you know what? I feel like to some degree we've placated this kind of nasty behavior on the part of Muslims, of saying, well, we don't want to anger them, and as long as we just tell everyone else you're being bad, they're going to not be crazy. And I got to tell you something. They're going to be crazy regardless. As far as they are concerned, okay, as far as every hardcore Muslim is concerned, they want the entire world to live under a caliphate. And under the caliphate, do you think you have a fucking right for freedom of speech to say, disagree with the words of the Quran or the words of Muhammad or even the words of the local fucking mullah? You don't have this right?
I mean, okay, but does this not conjure up in anyone else's head this image of, like, okay, when we talk about somebody burned a book, somebody set fire to some paper, and then a whole bunch of people rioted. Does anybody else have an image in their head of somebody sitting in a padded room chewing on their own arm like I do? This is ridiculous. The reaction to this is gone so far beyond what is normal, what is allowable, what is acceptable. Yeah, I mean, at this point, don't we just say, like, these people are so crazy. These are institutionalizable crazy people.
Well, they're not crazy because apparently 1 billion people believe the same bullshit that they do. And they absolutely want you to agree with it and to never, ever say anything bad.
But how ridiculous does this shit have to get before someone goes, okay, maybe religion's a bad idea. You know, like, we're burning some paper and people are having a freaking nervous breakdown and rioting and killing other people. I mean, at what point does the impact of something tiny influence something gigantic Do we, at that point, we say, okay, religion's ridiculous, and we all need to stand up and go, hey, this is starting to corrode away at our world. How bad does it have to get?
Well, let me just put this as a sort of a concept. Imagine that in Canada, a bunch of people, say in Afghanistan, a bunch of people were burning the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that Canada is sort of like signed in 1981. And the results of which was that 20 people, 20 native Afghans living in Canada were killed in a random fucking riot. Would anyone go over and say to the Afghans, you shouldn't have burned the Charter of Rights and Freedoms?
Exactly.
You were in the wrong there. And every other rioter that decided that it was a great idea to throw stones at someone until they died, well, they were just naturally expressing their anger at the fact that you had suddenly decided to burn a symbolic totem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what this is. It's nothing but symbolism. And if you have a problem with this sort of symbolic gesture, then I would say that not only are you so easily offended, not only are you so insecure in your fucking beliefs that you need everyone else to never, ever disagree with you. You're saying, well, you know, for anyone else out there, be they religious, be they Christian or be they Muslims, I'm like, let me ask you a question. Are you so afraid of your own religion's, you know, faults and inaccuracies that you're worried about what other people think? I mean, keep in mind that these are the people that are convinced that they hold the only truth. And yet at the same time, if you disagree with that truth, for them, there is nothing more than death or beheading that is sort of the punishment for disagreeing with them. I'm like, if this is the word of God, then why the hell is it such a problem? You shouldn't even have an issue with me disagreeing. Apparently, I'm going to burn in hell forever. So what is the goddamn problem? Why do you need to have control? Why do you need to have power in this life if you actually believe that in the next one, God is the one that has all the power? Why do you need control here? Why do you feel that need? And I would say that it's not because of all these weird justifications that you have saying, I'm really trying to save some souls. I'm really trying to save people. No. You recognize that like any other religion in the history of mankind, you have a shelf life, all right? You need to defend your belief because you know that it has an expiry date, all right? Who's a Zoroastrian these days, huh? It used to be the biggest fucking religion in Persia. Everybody was a fucking Zoroastrian, and now no one is. Except for maybe like 100,000 people that are still like, why do you believe in this? No one even, it's dead. It's over, man. It's like fucking 8-track. It is the 8-track of religion. And all religions suffer from this kind of problem. And I think that it creates, at least in them, a kind of inferiority complex where they feel the need to defend them with violence, with deadly violence. 19 people dead.
Okay, but I think we should take this down to a personal level, because this is the problem I have. When we, and I'm going to be a little bit blunt here, when we as atheists talk about religion, sometimes we tend to think about them in a big group, a big otherness group, this otherness group of other people who think totally different than I am, but the reality is these are just people. It's just one person, one place, did one thing to a fucking book, and a one person some other place felt so upset by this tiny little gesture that they physically killed someone. Like, I think we need to take this down to people, okay? Somebody, some one person, and several of these one person units is crazy enough to be so moved by burning some paper that they need to murder someone else. They need to take away someone else's life to then feel better. And none of us, or we're, you know, I don't know who's doing it, who's saying that we need to scold what's his pickle for actually burning the Quran.
Terry Jones,
douche.
He's a douche, but he's allowed to do what he's doing.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, like, why are we looking at him being like, oh, this is clearly his fault? How about it's the fault of a religion that makes people this insane? That makes things like this logical.
Well, these are probably, I bet you, everyone who threw the stone that eventually killed, you know, either those UN employees or whoever else, other innocent fucking bystander that got hit over the head with it and died, I would venture to guess that none of those people actually knew how to read. You want to bet? You want to fucking bet that every single one of those people were illiterate? Of course they're illiterate. They've never read anything. They have been spoon-fed the Quran. And in fact, most Muslims, the vast majority of them, they've never read it. They have just been told to memorize it from just basically speech. So they may have memorized the Quran. In fact, many of them probably have, at least to some degree. But they've never read anything else. They've never bothered to read all of the books that are out there. And I mean, like, there's a lot of books here. There's a lot. There are different ideas about morality, about cosmogony. I mean, think about how many people have written books. For goodness sakes, Jenny McCarthy wrote a book. All right. There are lots of books out there.
I just can't wait till the day, I mean, we won't be alive, but I can't wait till the day when there's a bunch of people sitting around, and you know how the way we think of, like, troglodytes, we think of cavemen?
Sure.
That's the same vision we have of this particular scenario. We just, like, in the future, we just look back on this and we go, that is so barbaric and arcane and ridiculous that we have no concept of that and could never understand that people can even do that.
Yeah, we will definitely be dead when that happens. And if we're not, then I guess apparently I'm out of a job. which is one of those things where I actually, you know, when people say, well, what if you lived in a world where there was no religious conflict? You'd be out of a job. I'm like, oh, boo-hoo. I would fucking work as a landscaper or something else in this weird paradise that we suddenly live in. Oh, there's no more problems where religion is causing mayhem? Gee, I wonder what I'm going to do. I don't know. Live a glorious life in this fucking utopia, right? I'm not worried about losing my job. In fact, I want to lose my... I want to work myself out of my job. I don't think that's actually possible. Is that depressing? Is that job security? I don't know. But trust me when I say that I would rather never record another podcast if it meant that we lived in a world without such ridiculousness, where I actually have to tell you, where we have to have a debate about whether or not people should be allowed to say whatever the fuck they want or burn whatever the hell they want if they bought it. I mean, Terry Jones bought those Korans. He didn't just steal them from a bunch of starving Afghans, okay? He bought them with his money. Somebody made a profit. I don't know who. Penguin Publishing? Maybe. I don't know who. But anyway, somebody made a profit. He just burned it. Maybe he wants to do it again. He'll have to buy more Qurans, which means whoever prints them will make more money and be able to distribute more Qurans. Like, I'm just going to put that out there. Him burning it probably sold more Qurans than doing nothing with it. But of course, plenty of people had to die and be hurt because of such ludicrousness. And then, of course, and then us right here in the West, what do? Rather than condemn these actions, rather than sort of like say, there is a problem here, we need to do something about this, let us be courageous, say fuck you to this kind of action. No, we say, Terry Jones is the problem. Terry Jones caused the death of 19 people and injured 100 individuals. Yeah, he did, eh? Yeah, he took a lighter fluid, lit it up. Meanwhile, 19 other people died. That's a direct consequence. His fault. Come on, folks. We can do a lot better than that. And I mean, I understand the political reasons why Barack Obama would say that, right? Afghanistan is a lost cause. Let me assure you, okay, after reading, I read Where Men Win Glory, which is the story of Pat Tillman in Afghanistan. You read that story and you realize that Afghanistan is a hellhole. You will never win a war there. It's impossible, all right? Every empire that's tried to occupy Afghanistan has crumbled. I assure you. And it's done that since the 11th century. Afghanistan is a hellhole, okay? Stay the fuck out of there. There's nothing to win there. You're not going to win any hearts and minds, okay? Because the kinds of people whose hearts and minds you're trying to win will murder other individuals if you do something as insignificant as burn a piece of fucking paper that has a couple of Arabic writings on it. That's it. It's fucked. Get out of there. You don't need any more dead Pat Tillmans over there. Just get the fuck out of there.
Okay, so what's up with this crazy DVD?
This DVD...
The 10 proofs.
Okay, so you want to move on?
I think...
We knocked that one out of the park,
absolutely.
Man.
We're angry. Somebody Twittered that I was more angry in the last two shows than you were, so well, I'm trying to stay more calm.
I have to make up for that. That's why I'm being angry now.
Okay, that's a good point. Maybe it's because you weren't angry enough, not because I was so angry.
I'm only angry because I had to pay for fucking $5 for some hot dogs. I'm angry. I'm still angry about that. I'm just...
So this DVD.
Yeah, okay. Now, you guys know that I absolutely love going to websites that offer proofs of God. I don't know how many times I've posted videos, articles... that kind of thing. This one I found to be kind of interesting for the following reasons. This Bob Dutko character, has, and I would say, a huge gamut of DVDs for sale, not just this 10 proofs, you know, against God's or for God's existence, but, you know, companion series trying to arm religious people to debate with atheists and so on and so forth.
Sounds like he's got some hustle.
The man has hustles, and he charges about, let's say, so I think it's between $15 to $20 for his DVDs, which I would say, like, I'm in the wrong racket, man. I charge that per year for bonus memberships. I feel like an idiot. I should be, you know, putting out these 10 proofs that God is just a figment of your imagination, sell that for fucking $20, and then retire in a place where you don't have to pay $5 for hot dogs. That's what I want in life. I want a place where I don't have to pay,
we
spend
that
much money.
From the hot dogs?
No, never. We'll be talking about it throughout the fucking episode, the ridiculous amount of money I spend on hot dogs. But I want to go through first, I guess, his four different arguments for it, because he only offers four, I guess, because it's a freebie. And in the freebie, he doesn't want to give it all away. But the first thing that he says, and you'll notice this with the more sophisticated version of people that try to say that there is proof for God's existence, they will use two scientific principles to try to suggest that God exists. And it's usually the first and the second laws of thermodynamics, which they have read, probably on Wikipedia, and then they've understood that this is somehow, this scientific principle means that it is impossible for life or the universe to have arisen by itself. All right, so in the first law of thermodynamics, which is what he says is the first proof there had to be a God, he's like, well, matter cannot be created or destroyed, so how did matter get created, since it can't be created or destroyed? And he's like, well, science has therefore proven that matter can't be created or destroyed, ergo, God created all matter because of the first laws of thermodynamics. That's his first proof. Aside from Carissa. Actually, you know,
nothing can be created or destroyed. Therefore, my imaginary friend creates and destroys everything.
Right.
What?
Well, it's a very common thing. But I would say that anybody who tries to bring forward the, you know, at least the first law of thermodynamics saying, well, energy cannot be created or destroyed, I would just answer quite simply from probably what most physicists would tell you is that before the universe began, say at the singularity that we would consider the Big Bang, the laws of physics weren't like they are now. In fact, we don't even know how the laws of physics were. We have a very good understanding of how the universe was like, say, about a picosecond after the Big Bang. But anything before then is a mystery because, as it turns out, the laws of physics actually break down. They are very different from what it is now. So that would be true for, say, gravity or the strong or weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and, oh, I don't know, the first or second laws of thermodynamics. You're like, I don't like to necessarily go into this whole weird, we don't quite know what things were like at the beginning, because obviously that's the problem, right? We don't. We can try to sort of like push the boundaries of their of that knowledge. That's what we always do. The truth is, maybe we won't ever know what it was like there before, because to some degree, like I said before, because the laws of nature weren't the same, all we can do now is really measure the laws of nature as they exist now. And there is a limitation in that. We can have theoretical models of what a universe might be like without those particular rules. And there are some people that say, for instance, well, if the universe is electrostatically neutral, it means that there wasn't really it wasn't really necessary for any prime mover or first cause, since the universe itself could have been a first cause, since electrically the universe is at zero, which is exactly what you would expect from nothing. And maybe there is maybe nothing is one of those unbearable things that the universe can't stand. Like, you just can't have nothing. You need to have something rather than nothing. I don't know the answers to these questions, but it would seem to me a kind of a weak argument to say, well, science has proven that energy can't be created or destroyed, or therefore God did it, because God exists outside these rules.
Not only that, but I hate the whole idea that they go, okay, let's look through the science textbook. Oh yeah, evolution, let's just skip over that. All this other stuff, let's just skip over. Oh look, something that might kind of almost make sense if there was a creator, if I leave out all this other stuff, I'm gonna now use science to prove that God exists. You're not allowed, okay? If you're not gonna take the whole thing, You can't have any of it. If you're not going to follow the scientific process, you can't use our hard work to prove your bullshit theories.
Well, not just that, but I mean, if you're going to say we need to prove or we need to use science to uncover whether or not God exists or doesn't exist, now you're in a weird spot because in science, you have to present theories or ideas that are falsifiable. You're like, if you're going to have a scientific theory, if you're going to present a model, you have to say, well, here's how this model could be wrong. Right? That's the most important aspect of science is sort of, it's not just this trying to prove that you're right. It's other people trying to prove that you're wrong. And even the best science is usually done by people who are honest about the margins of errors, the kinds of ways that they might be wrong. That's the most important aspect of science because it is a way of trying to understand the world, but we obviously understand as human beings that our way of understanding the world may be limited, you know? But the important thing, I think, is to understand that even though, and you'll hear this all the time from guys like Ray Comfort, for instance, well, they'll say, well, you keep changing the age of the universe or the age of the earth, and therefore science is never sure of anything, and therefore science is wrong. I'm like, I think that you've obviously misunderstood the fundamental aspect of science, which is not to say that we are 100% true. It's just that we must refine our idea of the universe to try to get to an approximation of the truth. We may never actually end up with that big T, you know, that big T that everybody wants. Like, tell me when the universe started. Tell me how it all began. Tell me everything that you can about life so that I can finally understand it, I can quantify it, and I can feel satisfied from your answers. And the honest truth is you're like, I don't think you're going to be able to do that, buddy. But at least, at the very fucking least, you can understand how most of it works or how you came along or how things like the earth formed or stars formed or how, you know, the elements that make up most of your body were created and all these other things. These are answers that we do have. We know these things. Religion does not have any idea of what those things are. The concept of God is not an explanation. It is the exact opposite of an explanation. It is a desire to try to mix in myth and superstition into the realm of knowledge. It has absolutely no purpose there. Zero.
So principles one and two of why proofs that God exists are bitch slapping science. What's three?
Okay, well, I want to go back to two because he talks about the second law of thermodynamics, and you'll hear this a lot from creationists because they say that in a closed system, essentially things move more towards chaos. So if you want to think about that in a simple way, take a salt shaker and put the bottom half with pepper and the top half with salt and then mix it around. And what do you get? You get like this gray thing, right, where it's all completely utterly mixed. Mm-hmm. How many times do you have to shake that salt shaker in order to be able to have those two, pepper and salt, be separated and ordered again? What are the odds of that happening? They're like zero. They're not existent. So in a closed system, things move more towards disorder. That's entropy. That's the second law of thermodynamics. And you'll hear creationists use this all the time saying, well, how is it that life can become more complex? How is it that information can, increase in complexity and so on and so forth if the second law of thermodynamics exists? And let me assure you that there's a very, very fucking simple explanation to this. You don't even need to look far. It is gigantic. It is burning you all the time. It is a gigantic nuclear oven that is about 150 million miles away from your present location, and that is the sun, okay? The sun provides all the energy that makes the Earth not a closed system, and that's why there's no entropy here on Earth. It's not because God goes around being like, oops, sorry, we need more order here. Ho, ho. I know he sounds like Santa. But yeah, the second law of thermodynamics is such a weak argument that obviously the people who use it don't really understand it. And I used to have the classic stories. I remember back in college, I had an argument with one of my, well, then friends, but the guy was just a fucking moron. And we talked about entropy in particular. And he was just saying, he was trying to use the same argument that, well, in reverse, where he said, where I was trying to explain that in a closed system, things move more towards disorder until it reaches a certain maximum disorder. And he was like, no, it isn't. You could open up the salt shaker and you could separate those little items and then they would be ordered again. I'm like, that's not a closed system, you fucking moron. Right. It's the same kind of issue, except for in reversed. Sometimes people are too fucking stupid to understand a principle that isn't altogether that complicated. Let's move to the last, I guess, his final point that he had, where, and I know this will seem almost unbelievable that I'm using this as an argument, because it is unbelievable, but he says that since no one was around at the time of the Big Bang, that no one can really prove what the beginning of the universe was like, because no one was there to observe it.
Okay.
And there's two flaws with this argument, is that one...
No, wait. Yeah. That's the end of the argument?
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay, so nobody was there, so no one can know, so therefore I know?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, no one was there to basically tell you what the Big Bang was like, therefore the Bible is correct.
Oh my God. Oh my God, how are these people? How?
I know it hurts.
It's so painful.
I know it hurts. And the funny thing is that even when a person tells you that we weren't there and we can't know this, I think that the part that's I find always the most hilarious is actually you can see that. If you turn on your TV and you watch the static, you see that you are a witness to the early formations of the universe. And you wonder, how is that possible? Well, it turns out that there is a background radiation that is emitted anywhere. This is ubiquitous throughout the universe. And you can detect it as very weak radio waves. And these radio waves tell you exactly what happened. It's like, oh, there was a gigantic explosion, which emanated this a tremendous amount of radiation and heat and so on and so forth. And you're like, this is something you can see. You don't have to be there. The equivalent would be you walk up to a car crash and you see pieces of a car everywhere. Sure, you weren't there to see the car crash, but you know what happened. There are pieces everywhere. There's a stop sign that's all bent and broken. There are, pieces of glass everywhere. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, let's just take it even one step further than that. I'm willing, even though it's incorrect, to be like, fine. We weren't there. You weren't there. I wasn't there. Nobody was there. We don't know. We just don't know. So therefore, there's a great God in the sky who monitors everything we do and say. That's now logical because we weren't there at the beginning of the Earth? How the hell... Those ideas are so not even connected that pretending that that's a proof that there isn't God is offensive to reason in general.
You, sir, have offended the gods of reason. That's what you've done.
The gods of reason.
The thing. Gods of reason.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, I secretly wish that I had access to his 10 proofs because I could only give you the limited small ones that he provided.
But we refuse to give that pathetic piece of shit any money.
I don't want
to
give him 20 bucks. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, an extra $20 is for him to have a broader audience, to have more dummies buy his fucking bullshit. So, yeah, I don't want to give him any money. But I still wish I could sort of comb through the rest of the arguments because there is no one yet. I have never met anyone so far. Maybe I'll meet these people one day. But I've never met anyone that has been able to provide a satisfactory argument as to the existence of God. And you know what? This is really my challenge to anybody out there. Please, if you think that you have any kind of fucking proof, then show me. I would venture to say, and this probably makes me sound cocky, that it's unlikely that you would find something. And I do believe that atheism has won the intellectual battle when it comes to us discerning whether or not there is or isn't a God. And it wasn't a very difficult battle to begin with. Because when you think about our opponents were convinced of something before they had any arguments to its validity. They were convinced that there was a personal God. Some of them were convinced that he showed himself in human form 2,000 fucking years ago and issued a number of very, very crude and oftentimes inefficient, ineffectual laws and then left, somehow supposedly returning. But nevertheless, you're like, these are regional ideas. These are such provincial gods, deities that you've presented me. None, like if maybe there would have been a religious idea that encapsulated the wonder, the scope, the magnificence of the universe, maybe I would have thought, hey, they were onto something. Maybe maybe this sort of like super omnipotent, powerful God let them know where they lived, you know, in a corner of an insignificant galaxy, one amongst many galaxies in an increasingly expanding universe. But no one really has come close to this idea. It's always the most boring and provincial of fucking deities that's concerned with one specific people and their little goddamn problems. And meanwhile, you're like, who cares, man? Who fucking cares? Have you ever come up with an idea? Is your cosmogony even encapsulating the size, the scope, the magnificence of the universe? Not even close. They're provincial. They're pathetic. In comparison, the truth is a lot more interesting. This notion that there's a supreme being that cares about how you live or who you fuck is so distressingly dull. And for me, that's the general point, that most people who are really religious have a kind of limitation as to their ability to really see, understand, and fathom the scope of the universe. You are an ant living on a tiny ant of a planet in the most insignificant section of the galaxy that there is. I mean, you're on the outskirts, man. You're not even living in suburbia, okay? You're in the boonies. You're in the fucking boonies. You are so far off that if it was the equivalent of on Earth, you wouldn't even be getting mail or electricity or running water, okay?
Okay, but it's a good thing we live out here, because otherwise we'd be bombarded by so much shit, there's no way there'd be any life.
Yeah, you have to live on the outskirts. In the middle of the galaxy where things are happening, there's like suns going nova all the time,
space
radiation everywhere. Yeah, space is really
dangerous.
Space will kill you. But the beautiful thing about space is that, number one, it's huge and massive. And number two, it's constantly expanding, so you're not even being constantly bombarded with horrible and hideous rays that would otherwise obliterate you and, you know, make sure that you were just a giant glob of molecules improperly rearranged.
I also think that atheists definitely have the advantage in terms of intellectual argument when it comes to religion. I mean, let's set all the fact that, you know, the mountains of evidence, the ridiculousness of their dogma, their aversion to critical thinking or anything that would help them in any way be any kind of good debater. But also, how about this? Most atheists have been where they are. How many religious people can say that, oh yeah, I was atheist for a little while and
except for Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, exactly. And then it didn't make any sense anymore, and I moved back over to religion because it made more sense. Now, what probably happened was you were scared shitless by the fact that you will eventually die.
Yeah.
You didn't have the state of mind or, you know, presence of character to handle that, and you went running back to your big father figure in the sky so you could pretend that you have somewhere to go after you perish, you stupid piece of shit. Like, seriously. So,
oh, Carissa, you're so nice.
I know. So I just think, you know, part of the reason why there's no way to argue against the idea that there is no God is because we got every single advantage as atheists on our side. Yeah. We've been there.
We know how you think. Because
we thought that way.
We thought that way at some point. Like any child who's ever believed in Santa, you are also very well equipped to debunk Santa, aren't you? Yeah. If you have a conversation with someone who still believes in Santa, how long will it take you to demolish that idea? Not very long. Santa is one of those ideas that's in, you know, you're practically inviting it to be demolished. And I think that the same is true for God. God should be demolished. We should invite other people to break down this idea because, you know, as soon as you do, you recognize the fact that, like I said before, it is provincial. It is a reflection of our, you know, our own insecurities, the fact that we assume inference on things or events, and our own childhood where we ourselves are at the mercy of godlike entities that we call our parents that are, oh, surprise, surprise, not unlike many of these provincial gods. Their personalities, inherently human. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, you know what? We're going to wrap up the show. I want to remind everybody that we're actually back to our regular schedule now. It's going to be a little bit tough considering the fact that I don't know if you've, I wish you could see our setup. This is the fucking crudest thing in the world.
We should take
here.
A picture. No, it'll get better though. It'll be better.
It will get better over time.
We just moved in a couple days ago. We're just getting set up.
Yeah. We're right now the microphone is sitting on a plastic bin and we're sitting on a very uncomfortable futon that is also our bed.
So if you were like, oh, those bastards basking in the sun in the Dominican, trust me, we're getting our comeuppance.
Oh, so much so. We're the revenge is sweet for anyone who is angry at our tropical escapades. We are back to the land of
expensive hot dogs.
The expensive hot dogs and uncomfortable futons. Yay! Good atheist, yay! And I'm also posting regularly again. So I encourage you, if you enjoy the show, if you enjoy the site, to become a regular patron. That's $20 a year. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be featuring more bonus content. Unfortunately, that's going to be for hardcore patrons. These are people who pay $5 a month. But I'm working on what's called the Good Atheist Companion, which is basically me going through all the shows, writing much more detailed information. So they're essentially like chapters, doing some behind the scenes kind of things, and even writing more about the tangents. Because if you've ever listened to many of the shows, some of them I just go on fucking crazy tangents. Well, the companions will include all the information on the tangents.
So there'll be long articles about how expensive hot dogs are. That's great. I'm super excited for this.
Maybe not
content
for episode 130. So shut up your mouth.
Don't forget to come on Monday or like the following Monday or the Monday after if you're in Calgary and hang out with us.
Yeah, please hang out. Hopefully after the event, we're going to go out, have some drinks, shoot the fucking shit. I'm in Calgary for how long are we here?
I don't know.
For another probably 4 months or something like that.
I don't
so
think that long.
In that time, we're going to be trying to hook up with people that are here.
Hook up with?
Hook up, yeah, yeah. No, that's not that kind of hook up.
No?
No, just hanging out.
Oh.
You little pervert.
Got me all excited.
Yeah, well, whatever. Okay, well, with that, my name is Jacob Vortag.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.